Welcome back, Level One Coaching Podcast. Drew Carlson here again, and you will hear from Mikhail shortly. This episode, we're going to kind of continue an application of the infinite game. And we talked about it last episode. In this one, a little bit different application. We're going to talk about it in terms of basically in the infinite game, you want to be available to play in the next game and to be invited. And to do that, there's this lifestyle, this longevity, sustainability bucket that you're going to want to be full on. So Cody Royal, for example, someone that we study a little bit and are connected with, he talks about how coaches need to, if they're not already, start to see themselves as high performers. And he kind of jokes that, like, you don't have to be doing the same workouts as your athletes, like some of the crazy Division I strength coaches are that you see on Instagram. But the point of it is that you should be doing some sort of it or taking steps to take care of yourself, to increase your odds to be invited to the next game, to be available, to be healthy, to be, and not just physically. And we'll kind of get into that with this question. So when I kick it over to you, we talked off air and you're talking about Friday home games, first game of the weekend, typically in college, and you're lifting pretty intensely. So many of you might think, like, you know, it might be just for physical reasons. You guys are both young coaches. Drew, you come from a strength conditioning background, but what is, like, the real or the underlying reason why you're, you know, lifting pretty intensely on a Friday?
For me, most of it stems from, I know that if I get up, like, I prefer to work out in the morning just in general, no matter what. Some people obviously might prefer in the afternoon, but for me, I know if I get up, usually go for a walk outside and then go work out, I'm going to have a much better opportunity that day to be mentally prepared, fresh, like my thoughtful, I guess. Like, I don't, thought inducing. It's a, when I work out in the morning, like, generally what happens is I leave and go back home, and right in that time, like, I start to have a lot of thoughts come in, like, about maybe what we could do for that game, or it's kind of less about the Friday specific morning, although I do it that day, and more about, like, just throughout the course of the week, working out in the morning. Like, that's generally when I'm, like, it's a time where you're, for me, like, I honestly, it's maybe a psycho move, but I usually work out with no headphones. Which I'm same. in the small minority there, at least in the YMCA that I go to.
I'm with you.
But, like, I walk no headphones and then go to the gym no headphones. And usually, like, throughout that, call it like hour or a little over an hour, I have a lot of different thoughts that'll come in that are usually pertaining to hockey, of, like, sometimes they're super minute of, like, maybe we should do something like this week as it for a drill. And other times it's like, maybe this is a way that we can get to this recruit that we're not getting to right now. Or, but what I find as it pertains, like, the Friday night, is that now, like, my mind is fresh and I've kind of, like, checked that box off from a physical standpoint. And I look at it as a coach, like, you need to be fresh, but you don't, like, your legs don't need to feel good in order to coach well that night. Like, it's not about, it's your mind that needs to feel good. And so for me, like, getting in the gym and, like, sweating and working out, that helps my mind feel fresh and I feel sharper. I feel like I'm more prepared. And even Saturdays, like, we play Friday night and then Saturday afternoon. Very rarely did I ever work out on a Saturday, because we get home, even at a home game, you get home at like 10:30, 11 at night. And then I sometimes I'm watching film, and if I'm not that night and I just go right to bed, then I usually will watch in the morning. So I don't have like, I can try to force a workout in, but a lot of times then I feel like, all right, I need to start whatever it is for today's game, because then it's a quick turnaround. You play at like 3. But non-negotiable for me on Saturday is going for a walk, and I usually go a little bit longer. And even like when we're, I just thought of it now before we talked on air, like even away games, like in a random town in New York or Mass or Vermont, usually go for like a 15-minute walk. And it's a time where like I'm away from my computer, I'm away from my phone, I'm not actually watching anything that happened from the night before, but I'm processing it and I'm thinking about it. And it's one of the few times in that whole day where I won't have my phone or my computer on me, which is just more inputs, whether it's text messages, Twitter notifications, friggin' ESPN. Like you're free of that for whatever that chunk of time is. And that's, sorry, that's where I started to go with the workout and no headphones, is like I'm not on my phone and I'm not listening to anything. So nothing is being forced as far as an input, and it's just whatever comes in, comes in. And that's the point of the walk, the working out, is like you're free now to just kind of like let your mind wander and see where it goes. And I have another thing on this, but I'll kick it back to you first before we jump into that.
Yeah, I'm with you on all of it. And as you were talking, I kind of had not necessarily an insight, but just maybe a way to frame it. And with like, anyway, I'll just get to it. But I wrote down like when the blood stagnates for me, the thoughts stagnate. So like they're very much connected. And whether when I was like, I was also when I was coaching the junior team 3, 4 years ago now, I was working out on game day for the same reasons. I work out in the morning before I come home and write now, while I'm not coaching for the same reasons. And if there's a morning that like I sleep through an alarm, or even on like programmed off days from the gym, I almost have to program an off day from writing because there's nothing coming in. And when I'm working out, and you guys will see it if you follow me on Twitter, like I'll have a tweet storm at 5:30 in the morning because I'll go work out at 4:30 most mornings just because I don't like people being there. And there's a ton of people that use my gym, so I go early. But I'll be tweeting after the sauna at 5:30 in the morning, and some of you will be like, what the hell is going on? Like, why is this kid up? But like, I've already, without headphones, like Mikhail was talking about, like allowed for inputs to come in, the blood's moving, and so are the thoughts. And then I put them out, and then I come home and typically write about those and expand on them. So, if the blood's stagnating, the thoughts are stagnating for me. And I'll kick it back to you for either jump off that, or you had another insight that you were going to talk about.
Well, yeah, they're actually, they go hand in hand. So what I was thinking of, without knowing that you were going to say this, with the blood and the thoughts, is like, and I don't recall where I heard this. I know it was on a podcast. It was like, I can remember vividly where I was listening to it, but it was a good 2 years ago now. And this it was an author. It may have been Charles Duhigg, who's written The Power of Habit and Smarter, Faster, Better. I think it might have been him. He's one of my favorite authors. And he talked about, like, essentially, if you imagine where you're standing right now and you have headphones in, or you're listening to music, or you're on your phone, your mind is able to access, call it like 3 square feet of memory. So anything that's happened in your life that you've read, heard, talked about, while you're actively doing something else, it can access maybe 3 square feet. So that's not a lot when you think about how much area that takes up. When you are not doing anything, so no inputs, no headphones, no phone, no book, nothing, and you're just there, your mind can access something like, I don't remember now off the top of my head, but it was like acres of memory. So now you're talking like thousands, and I don't know, maybe millions of square feet. I don't know that conversion, but all of a sudden your mind is open to access way more past experiences, thoughts, insights than if you were actively bringing something in. And the reason I think this matters is because how often do you block out times of the day to not take something in? Very rarely. Even if you turn your phone on Do Not Disturb, you probably have your computer open, or you are watching TV, or you're in a conversation with someone else, or you're reading a book. So blocking out times, like there's a reason that people will say like, yeah, I had this thought like while I was in the shower, or I had this thought like when I was driving. Like there are plenty of times where you can block out certain parts of your day where there's no inputs coming in. So like, just as an example for me, like I said, working out with no headphones and walking with no headphones, that's a time. A lot of times during the season, more so than in the summers, I will drive with no music on or no podcast playing for the same reason, even if it's just a 10-minute drive, 15-minute drive. Same rationale. If you sauna, in the sauna, like some people bring their phone in the sauna. Like I
don't do that. Stop doing that. If you do that, stop doing it.
I don't do it for the sole reason that you start to sweat, and I can't imagine it's good for the battery of your phone. I don't want to pay for a new phone every year. I also don't understand it, because like, just put the thing away for 30 minutes or however long you're in there for. So that's another time. And then even just like, if you're at home in your apartment, in your house, like, and let's say you're like making dinner or something like that, like, obviously in the shower, don't turn a podcast on or music on while you make dinner. Don't do it while you're in the shower. Same kind of idea. Like, it doesn't mean that every day, all the time, you have to do these things. It's just that like, if you intentionally block out chunks of time where you don't have any inputs coming in, it can be very productive. And as it pertains to what we started talking about with game days on Fridays and Saturdays, like, that's the reason, at least for me, that I do those things. So I work out in the morning. I like to work out and sweat as it is, but also no headphones, no podcast, no music. This helps me, like, sometimes I get a great insight, maybe sometimes nothing, but either way, I was available for it. And then same thing Saturday morning, like, I can't tell you how many times that I can like specifically remember almost all of our road trips. We had 5 road trips, and Saturday morning waking up and going on a walk in the morning, like, and like sometimes literally on the side of the road, because we're just staying at a hotel. It's like not in a neighborhood or, you know, an actual area, and thinking about like something that happened the night before and how we could maybe try to adjust it. And what's interesting, and this is an anecdotal thing, because I'm not saying this is why the records were different, but our Friday night road record was 1-3-1 this year, and our Saturday afternoon road record was 4-1. And like, again, there's a lot of factors that go into outside of me going on a freaking walk.
That's for sure.
it is interesting to think like that. I mean, what level does that play a role in it at all? Like, and not for our team to win, but for me to be at my best, does it play a role? Absolutely. So yeah, that's just that, circling back to like that acres of land that you can access in your memory versus just those 3 little square feet when you're actively taking in inputs.
For sure. And like, your subconscious wants it that way. Like, what I wrote down and what I hear you saying is, create space for it. Like, the inputs might not come in, but every day, if you're making room for it, creating space for it, eventually they'll come in. And I think it's also, I don't know how it is in your experience, but like, there's a compounding effect with practice. So when I was in college, like, I was the typical college athlete or college person, can't speak for everyone, but like, you kind of get a sense just looking at the normies on TikTok and stuff and like what they're doing. But I was that person who was showering with music on and driving with music or a podcast on and just constantly getting inputs. And then I started writing and doing some creative work and thinking back to like some of my better days managing the team, managing the bench, and like the things that I was doing. And what I was doing unintentionally before I started finding out about maybe I should try this and experiment with it is I was making more space and just like when, and maybe it was a product of like we were losing a lot. So like sometimes I didn't want to hear some coach talk in a podcast and I'd be like, shut the fuck up, turn it off. And like I would coach better that night. And then maybe a few years later, I started writing and I was like, maybe I'll try that. And the point is, and piggybacking off what you said again, it's like you have to create space for it. And then when I first started writing and I first started going in the sauna after my workouts, the thoughts wouldn't come and I wouldn't have insights. And if you just like don't force it and you don't make it too important and you just come back the next day, try it again instead of give up and pick up your phone because it's easy. If you just sit with that as it's not working, as it's not working, as it's not working, all of a sudden, like you get that thought that's your own from the outside and it wasn't from an input and you're like, there's the aha moment. Like there's one. And then the next day you get another one. And then like now, again, I was talking about my tweet storms. Like now I'll get five or six in 20, 30 minutes in the sauna. And like, I'll just be going and then I'll come home and just pour it out onto a page. If you want to jump off there at all.
Yeah, I think it is. It does take time. It's not like the first day that you like go for a walk or workout or sauna or whatever with no headphones or no music like that. Like you're just automatically going to have this like profound breakthrough and be like, oh, I want it. Like it definitely, it takes time. It takes time because the natural inclination is like the first time you do it, you're going to be like, this is like, I'm bored. You're going to feel like you're bored and like there's nothing interesting that's coming in, so you're going to want to fill it with whatever. And I think for me, the first time I started like really intentionally doing this was I had gone, you know, like COVID happened and whatever that was, like 2020, I guess. Yeah. So like from basically March of 2020 to like October of 2020, I don't know how many, like, and this is not even like a weird brag. It's just like, there was nothing to do. So I read a bunch of books. I got super into reading again and I was listening to podcasts left and right, like 3 hours a day of podcasts. And just like, that was all I did. Anytime I got in the car, anytime I went outside to walk, run, work out, whatever it was, that's what I would do. And then I got my first job coaching in college and I was still used to that like intake, but now all of a sudden, like I was spending from like 6:30 to 1 or 1:30 in the rink for practices and not the whole time practicing, but then talking with our head coach. And like, I found myself leaving the rink with like so many inputs already of information I had taken in from that day's practice, from talking with our head coach, from talking with our players, like, that I was like, I can't like take in more information right now. Like I got to process all this. Like I'm bloated on information, and which is a real thing. And so I found myself like driving home back to my apartment with no music. And then I would usually like do the same thing, go for a walk or work out in the afternoon and also not listen to music or not pick up the phone and call anyone. Cause I had enough to like process on my own. And I think about that, like it didn't happen necessarily intentionally where I was like, I need to do this more often. I just sort of like stumbled upon it because I felt bloated, overwhelmed with how much information I was taking in already. And then I started to realize like, all right, I'm going to keep trying to do this. And then it's like, okay, now I'm going to not work out, or now I'm going to work out with nothing, or now I'm going to like, I wasn't going to the sauna 2 years ago. Like that's a more recent thing, but now I'm like, why would I go in the sauna with headphones? Like I don't need that at all. That's a good 30 minutes that I can just have thoughts come in. And sometimes like, honestly, even now, like sometimes nothing comes in and I just kind of sit there and like think about what I need to do the rest of the week or what's on the schedule for the weekend, like whatever. Like sometimes it's, you could call it not productive. But a lot of times it is. And when it is, then I'm like, all right, if I had to do 10 workouts or 10 sauna sessions to have one decent insight, that's fine. That's still worth it. And for me, like that's now it's become something that like, I don't even like intentionally go in there and think like, I hope I come out with a good thought today. Like it just, you go in there and like happens or it doesn't, but you've, like you said earlier, you've created the space for it.
Yeah. And like shift gears a little bit, just going off kind of what you were saying and what we were just kind of on the rabbit hole of like how all of that is good for your ability to think. Shift a little bit to the sustainability side. So, good for well-being, think of it that way. And you were talking to me off air, and I think it would be beneficial to just kind of share how there's space in your day, and it's probably intentional, and it's also a little bit of the environment, and the coach that you work for allows you the freedom and autonomy to kind of take care of yourself. But talk to me about how maybe like during the season when a lot of coaches are holed up in their office for 15-hour days, how you're intentional about breaking them up and doing what you need to do, and you can kind of share your process there.
Yeah, in that regard, like our head coach is awesome as far as allowing like time for whatever it is that's like not for whatever that's important to you, but like for things that you need or want to get done in that day. And honestly, like I've definitely been lucky, but I've worked for four head coaches, three in college, and all three in college have been very good about that and understand that there's more to a person than just being a coach, and you have other interests and priorities in your life. And so like for now, like, or here now where I am at, you know, we meet in the mornings. There's not really like a set time every day. I would say we're usually there around 9 to 10 o'clock. We practice late at night. We don't get home till usually 10 to 10:30, because we practice at 7 and it obviously goes till whatever 9. And then you talk about stuff afterwards as coaches. So you get home late. We're not in the office the next morning at 8 a.m. We're usually there 9 to 10 o'clock, which gives me the morning to work out all the stuff that we've been talking about. And then, you know, we generally meet, talk about practice, recruiting, anything that is pertinent for that day. Generally, we're planning practice out for the week. So it's not like every morning we have to meet and talk about that individual practice. But if there are tweaks that we want to make, we have time in the morning to do that. And then I'd say like the afternoon is kind of like, barring we'll meet with like, whether it's D or forwards or PP or PK, we usually do that twice, 2 to 3 times a week, depending on the week. But like that's a 30-minute meeting. That's not a 3-hour meeting. So outside of those times, like that time is like, I say free for me to use how I want, where like, if I wanted to work out in the afternoon, like we have a gym the floor below our offices, I could go do that. We now have a sauna that works. We didn't all winter, but now that it works, like I do that a lot of times, even now in the spring, like just go down to sauna in the afternoon. Like there's a lot of play squash with our other assistant. Like there's time in your day to do those types of things, as long as you're doing like quote the work that needs to be done. And you know, now in the spring it's really relaxed because recruiting is done by January 1st for us, and we have a lot of time to just like organize and get ready for next year. But once the fall hits, like there's a lot of stuff that has to happen quickly with recruiting, with practices, games. Like our season gets condensed even shorter than most Division III, and our recruiting timelines moved up a good 3 to 6 months. So in the fall that gets more limited. But like I guess the way all the head coaches I've worked for in college view it as like, I need, call it seven things done today or daily. And by both of us, you and me, but these are the things we need to do on any given day. But if you do them at 6 in the morning or 4 o'clock in the afternoon, like, I don't really care. Of course, there are certain things that are going to need to be turned in by noon. You know, if we're meeting with our penalty kill group, like, we can't be doing the film for the PK meeting at 3 o'clock when the meeting was at noon. That's not going to work. But whether you do that film at 6 o'clock this morning or you did it last night at 7 o'clock, I don't care. I just want it. We need it done as a group. And that's something that I've like honestly been very fortunate with, because I know not every coach operates like that. Not every team operates like that. But for me, like, that's the last thing I'll say. It's like, there's a difference, right? Like, if you ask, you know, say you need a player to execute a certain task within a game, you can get down his throat and be like, you need to effing do this the way I asked you to do, or like, you're not going to play the rest of the game. Or you could say like, hey, Drew, it's going to be beneficial for our team if you execute Y, Z, whatever, in this way. And in order for us to have the best chance to win, we really think or feel like you need to do this that way. Are you on board with this? Or do you have, like, what questions do you have with this? Because I need you to buy into this. And likely, either way, the player is going to do what you ask, because you're the coach and they're going to trust you that this is for the betterment of the team. The first way, though, where you yelled at him, he might do it out of spite. Be like, I'm going to do it, but screw you for making me do it and asking me or telling me like this. The second way is like, yeah, coach, I can do that. Or I don't understand why you want me to do it. Can you explain it further? I'm going to explain it further. Gotcha. Sounds good. I'm going to do it. So either way, you're getting to whatever that point is you want to get to, but the route that you took is very different. And it's the same thing with this for me, with the head coaches I've worked with. Like, I probably need you. I said seven tasks. Maybe it's like, I need 6 productive hours out of you today. But whether you spend those from 9 to noon and then again from 2 to 5, or you spend them from 6 to noon straight, I don't care. You do that how best fits your day and your life. Those are very different. Those are very different ways of going about it. Now I get this, like, head coach gets 6 productive hours out of assistant coach, but assistant coach is happy doing that because he feels like he has the autonomy to spend 9 to 10 doing this and 10 to 11 doing that, and not forced to do it all when head coach boss said, do it right now. It's the same thing with the player. You're still getting what you want out of the player and what you think the team needs, but the way the player feels about it when he's asked is totally different.
Yeah, if there was a flashing sign over your head, it'd be saying commander's intent right now. If you guys aren't kind of aware of that, the principle behind that essentially is, if you're teaching, whether it's a player in principles or you have principles for your staff, your culture, whatever, I don't care explicitly how it gets done. Here's the objective. Do it any way you see fit. That's essentially commander's intent. And like, the flip side of that, the story that's coming to my head as like you're talking about all this autonomy and freedom. I interviewed with a Division III school 2 summers ago, I think. And interview was going fine, whatever. And then one of the assistants from a different team, they had like a couple ACHA teams. So there's a couple of their coaches just doing the tour part that the AD didn't feel that he needed to be a part of. So the other coaches are taking me around and we go see the rink, and then he shows me the office and they're like, okay, so one rule about this is you have to be in here 8 hours a day, and like, the AD will check on you periodically and like, make sure that you're in here for those hours. And I was like, what the fuck? Because like, if you guys are familiar with like my writing and kind of just the lifestyle stuff that we're talking about, I'm not work agnostic, but I'm commander's intent. Like, if they're, I talk about all the time, like, if I'm coaching in a warm climate or you get a random, like there were days in Rochester, Minnesota, where it would be like 60 degrees. Not often, but like you get a day in November. And if I don't have players at the rink and I still need to like cut film for a film package for a meeting or whatever, like I'm not doing that in the basement of the rink. I'm doing that on my patio. So, and we can talk about like if you're where I'm kind of going with this is like as a level one coach, you might think like you can be in this finite mindset where like there's only a certain number of jobs. And I feel like I have to say yes, even though like when they told me that at that school, my soul like jumped into my throat and said, if you don't like say something or if this isn't kill criteria for you to turn it down, then like I'm going to have a problem with it as the spirit that's living inside of you. So if there's like things that come up, and I think these younger level one coaches have a better understanding of like how lifestyle and seeing themselves as high performers. And especially if you're just coming out of being an athlete and you're not just in, like some athletes do just hate working out. But it's not just about working out, whether it's, again, we talked about sauna for detoxing or just taking a walk for thoughts to come in, whatever the lifestyle thing that is you, is like, if someone says you have to be locked in this office for 8 hours a day, like that job might not be for you, and that's okay. So that's where I was kind of trying to teach that lesson the long way. If you want to jump off there at all.
Yeah, I think what you're saying is like you're looking or searching for fit. Obviously you want to work at whatever level it is. And you might have aspirations to get there quickly. But in that process, like you'll find or you will start to realize like what things I care about and what things those in X position care about. So I guess like the example would be like one that comes to mind for me is like hockey operations or like video coaches. That is a very specific role where you're generally doing like even hockey operations is like usually what it's called in college, and then video coach and pro and stuff, juniors. But like that's not always, depending on where you're at and what level, like it's not always a role where maybe you're coaching as much. I don't think most places you're allowed to be on the bench during games. So you're generally like doing more of a hands-off role in that sense where you're like up in the press booth or whatever broadcast booth. So like if you are a very extroverted person that, you know, absolutely loves being on the ice and talking to the guys, and like that's just how you operate and what you really enjoy is like helping run practice and going recruiting, and now you're looking at an operations job, a hockey operations or a video coaching job in a pro league, it's like you won't be doing any of that. It's a very different role. Like that might not be, even though you want to coach at that level, say it's like an AHL video coaching job, even though you want to coach in the AHL, like I'm not sure that is going to be a good fit for you. And then the same could go the other way, where like you love watching and cutting video and you really enjoy like the live aspect of it during games. And now you're looking at a job as like being a head coach at, you know, of a junior team or of a prep school or of a college team. It's like, there's a lot more you have to do now that's not related to video. In fact, you may need to pass the video aspect off to an operations guy, to a video coach, because there's a lot of other things that are going to be on your plate now. And I know you want to be coaching at that level now, or you want the financial security or whatever it is that head coaching job provides, but it might not be a fit for who you truly are. And I think you were talking more like criteria of like what certain things that maybe just don't jive with what I want. That's certainly true. And there are usually elements within a job when you're interviewing that you might think about and go like, I don't know if that's something I align with or something I'm interested in. I also think there's positions within different levels that, as great as it would be to go from D3 assistant to AHL video coach, if you really don't enjoy the video aspect, is the level jump worth it? And the same goes the other way. If you're a video coach and that's really what you've always enjoyed doing, but you're looking for the next step and it sounds like it's good to be a head coach because that's what people are telling you, but a head coach isn't necessarily like that job description isn't necessarily like what you want to be doing. I'm not sure it's a great idea to jump on it just because it provides X amount more or you know, financial job security, whatever it might be. So those are like more overarching, a little bit more zoomed out than the criteria, but it should still matter. You should still be looking at that and thinking like, is this sustainable for me? Am I really going to love being a head coach at this level now when I've been a video coach for X amount of years? Like, it's something that I don't think is always considered when you're focused on the next opportunity or the next place that you can go.
Yeah, what comes to mind, and we talked about this off air too, we're kind of hitting a lot of the points. But anyway, we talked about a podcast I was listening to, and I think it was TJ's podcast, but he was talking to a coach that coaches in the Swiss League. And me and you sometimes, and I'm sure a lot of people sit and wonder, like, on one hand, you can sit there and go, why aren't some of these European coaches getting NHL jobs? But the part that we didn't really think about until I remembered this podcast was, what if they don't want them? And what I mean by that is, so this Swiss league coach, he was talking about just what entails coaching in that league, just in terms of like logistics and stuff. And he's like, our longest road trip is 3 hours, furthest in the league. So that's as far as we'll travel. He's like, every night I get to sleep in my own bed. My kids are there. My wife's there. And I don't have to like stay in a hotel. I don't have to take a flight that gets into Colorado at 2:30 in the morning after a game from the East Coast. And he's like, I love it. And I'm well taken care of here. And it kind of like ties in that Mark Baker quote that I write about a lot. But if you haven't heard it, like, it's, if a dog shits in a room, you don't spray the shit with perfume, you clean up the shit. And essentially what that means is, like, there are things, again, whether they're kill criteria, whether they're lifestyle preferences that you don't necessarily want to budge on, there are things that you just don't want to do. There's shit that you don't want to put up with. And I think a lot of young coaches, and I was initially going down this path until I kind of woke up to it, they were just willing to take the next job and spray all the shit they didn't want to do with perfume instead of not take the job. And that's kind of where my brain goes on it, where you can sit here and think, like, why aren't these coaches getting a shot in the NHL? And then you can also say, maybe they don't want it at all. I'll kick that over to you.
Absolutely. I think forever until we talked about this like a week ago, I always kind of looked at the same way. Like, how could a guy be a successful coach in Europe or college, whatever level, that's not the NHL and not ever really get an opportunity in the NHL? And then you think about like how different they really are. And for a guy that's coaching in the Swiss league, like, first of all, you're living in Switzerland, which is unreal. And I don't know enough about like money and banks and stuff, but I know you can make a lot there. So I'll just leave it at that. So you got that going for you. And then the aspect of the travel, like you just said, like, there's no such thing as a road trip from the equivalent of Vancouver down to Tampa. Like, it just doesn't exist geographically. So now, like, if you're ever flying, you're still sleeping in your own bed and you're usually just on a bus. And that, like, you can't, how do you quantify the time spent with your family? Maybe you don't have a family. It's just the time spent doing what you want to be doing versus traveling. Like, there's no way to, like, quantify that value that it brings to your life. And so, yeah, it'd be great to coach the NHL, but I'd have to sacrifice all these things that to me aren't worth the sacrifice. And I genuinely think the same exists here in North America at other levels. Like, the one that pops off to me is like the Spit and Chicklets interview that Rand Pecknold did after they won the national championship. And admittedly, I haven't listened to Spit and Chicklets in probably 3 years, but that was an interview that I was curious to hear what he had to say. And I remember they asked him, like, what's next for you? And he's kind of like, well, I don't have any plans of leaving, blah, blah, blah. And eventually he said something to the effect of, like, I would never leave Quinnipiac to be an assistant in the NHL. And I would if I could be a head coach in the NHL. But in recent history, I can only think of, like, David Quinn and Jim Montgomery, who are able to do Dave Haxtell, I guess, too. At least those are the only three that I can come up with off the top of my head. But it's pretty hard to do. And I certainly say Pecknold should be in the discussion, and especially if he has some more success in the next few years, as if this hasn't been enough already. But, you know, like, you win another national championship or you get to another national championship game, like, you got to think he's in that conversation now. But for him, it's like, it was so interesting to hear for me, because it's like, he's at the pinnacle of the college game. I don't know that you can do any better than winning a national championship and being in the game, in that final game for, I think, three times in the last like 10 years or something like that. So he looks at that and like this, the not just the job security, but the quality of life he has at Quinnipiac now, to give that up to be an NHL assistant coach, where your quality of life changes a lot. Doesn't mean it's worse, it just changes. And you also, I mean, I think the truth is that you give up a lot of security. Maybe it's dependent on where you go, but like, the security of an NHL job is not quite the same as a college job. And so now he's giving all that up to achieve a dream. Yeah, but what happens if it doesn't go well? Or what happens if he doesn't like it? Like, say it's going well as the assistant for, let's just say he goes to Colorado and he's doing well, the team's doing well, but he's not enjoying it. It's not like he can just go back to Quinnipiac and be the head coach again. that job will be filled and there will be a contract, and you can't just go back and be like, psych, I didn't like this, I want to go back now. So it's like, there's a lot that I don't want to say there's a lot he could lose, but there's a lot that would change, and there's a good amount of uncertainty in that. And that's at the highest level. So when you talk about guys that are in the Swiss League or in college that haven't achieved what he has yet, they're giving up a lot to pursue the NHL. And it always seems from the outside, like, how is this guy not getting a chance? Now I think there's some of that for sure. How is this guy not getting a chance? But also, is this guy even interested in a shot?
Yeah, I think maybe we wrap it this way. The word that comes to mind is it's trade-offs, right? And to circle all the way back and to bring this home, like, there's trade-offs in initially with, we went back to like inputs and your ability to think. So you can make two choices. You can have your workout and you can listen to music, or you can be driving in the car and have music or podcast on, or you can do that silently. The trade-off is, are you creating space for thought or are you not? So there's one. And then kind of in the middle of the podcast, we were talking about my interview with that D3 team. And the trade-off is, if I take that job where there's a mandate of me being in the office for 8 hours a day, the trade-off is, I'm going to be miserable. I'm going to resent their rules. I'm going to resent their AD. I'm like, my mental health is probably going to suffer, because there's going to be days that I'm looking outside and the sun's out that I could be doing my job from my patio at my apartment, and I'm not going to be able to do that. And that's going to affect me, and I'm going to be pissed off about it. And that has second and third order effects the rest of the day at practice, with the players, with my girlfriend either on the phone that night, like whatever it is, like that matters, even if you don't see it initially. And then towards the end, the trade-offs of if you have a lifestyle and your needs are being met and you are well taken care of and you like where you're at, sometimes as much as everyone says they want to coach in the NHL, like how much of that is programming from the outside and how much of that is really what you want? And are you willing to trade off what you have for what's considered, air quotes, the pinnacle? But it doesn't necessarily have to be if you're in that like Mark Baker mindset. If you have any thoughts kind of to finish that out.
No, the only thing I would say to like wrap that up is like, as a level one beginning coach, like you might feel like you don't have you may not have that criteria figured out yet, and that's totally fine. When I started, I had no idea what I did or didn't like, did or didn't want. But as you go through it, you'll work with someone and you'll figure out like, that's interesting, I like that, or that's interesting, I don't like that. Like I said, I've been very fortunate that I haven't really seen much of what I don't like from a head coach. I've just seen a lot of like positive things as far as how I've been treated as an assistant. But you'll go through experiences where you'll be like, I don't want to work for someone like that, or I do want to work for someone like that. And that will guide you into your next steps when you are now looking at, say you start out as a U18 coach and you're looking at junior jobs, or then you're looking at college jobs from juniors. Like each step of the way, you're going to be able to take a little bit that you like and a little bit that you didn't like and apply it to that next spot and figure out like, is this next spot something I'm interested in, or is this next spot something that I don't think would match what I'm looking for in an opportunity? And over time, that list will get more solidified of things that you do want to find and things that you don't want to find. And like for you with that Division III school, like you're able to sniff that out and be like, oh, that's not something that's going to match what I'm looking for. You might not have felt that way 3 years prior when you first started coaching. So
1,000%.
Okay, if you don't know today, but as you go through, like whether it's making a physical note or mental note of things that you do or don't want, and opportunities, it'll help you find a good match, a good fit as you go forward, versus just kind of like throwing yourself to the wind and seeing where you land. Having at least an idea of things that you want, appreciate, and value, it's going to help you ultimately find others to work with or work for that also want and appreciate and value similar things.
That is a heck of a bow to put on top of it. I'm not going to say another word. And rewind the last take that Mikhail had, level one coaches, and we'll see you on the next one.